Welcome to episode 10 of the Dog Pound Daily Podcast. I'm Stephen Kubica. I am joined by Andrew Seipt. Andrew, can you believe that we are at 10 episodes? Should we celebrate?
I think we should definitely celebrate. Definitely celebrating.
Doing a fun episode.
Definitely impressed by the fact that there's more and more people that listen every time. Something that
I can't believe it.
Something that I didn't think was going to happen, but thank you to everyone that listens. We definitely appreciate it, and it's fun to to actually have people that pay attention to the ramblings that go on at the on the Dog Pound Daily Podcast.
Yeah, thank both of our moms, my roommate Brandon, me, refreshing the page. But let's get into it. It's kind of slow here as June begins and summer is almost officially here. We have some signings, Christian Kirksey. I don't think when we did our last episode that Myles Garrett was signed yet, but he is now.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of I think Kaiser's the only one that's not signed.
And Kaiser, Peppers too, and Njoku, right?
Oh, and Njoku, that's the other one. Yeah, it's kind of weird how the Browns do contracts. Like, I remember last year, they kind of start with the seventh rounders and almost
those are the easy ones.
Up. Yeah. You would think, I mean, it's all pretty much easy now. The only thing that really holds up contracts now are the that offset language. That's what held Bosa out for so long because he just didn't. I guess offset language is a huge deal. So
yeah, it's everyone wants their money, and you know,
well, either way, you're going to
love
the
game like the 1940s, the good old days.
Yeah, exactly.
But I mean, I think everyone should get their fair value.
Yeah, and I agree.
As a casual segue, Brock Osweiler is a player who is getting
more salary
over his
than
fair
deserves.
Value, reaching the Kirk Cousins territory.
And people, I mean, people are okay with paying Brock $16 million a year, but would be upset at throwing 20 at Jimmy. I don't get it.
Well, I mean, the Brock contract, it's interesting. I want to talk about it because it's such a weird situation. It's tough to say he may not be on the team week one because in March when it happened, everyone was like, oh, no big deal. He's going to be traded. But the Browns never explicitly said that. I mean, it seems like they were trying.
Oh, I think they definitely wanted to. I just don't think there was anybody willing to take him. So yeah. Even regardless of how much salary they were going to eat, I had a hard time believing that someone was going to take on like even $6 million of his contract to get to that RG3 type veteran contract in exchange for certain draft picks. Like it almost seemed like they were wishing that would happen versus something actually being there. So, yeah. I mean, I think it helps having him on the roster. I think with the way the Browns go through quarterbacks, it's definitely not easy to have, or it's definitely a good thing to have too many, you know? So I don't know. I don't think he could play football to me.
I mean, the good things about him, he's probably only going to be here on a 1 year situation because his contract is just guaranteed through this year, and I don't think the Browns are going to pay him this much again next year.
What happens?
They'd either
restructure
it to the point where he got next to nothing, but why keep him around? So he's on this 1 year kind of deal with the Browns where he's trying to prove himself for other teams, but it'd be hard to imagine him starting unless there's injuries because he's not in the team's plans at all.
Yeah, from what I read, that he looks pretty decent in practice, but again, it's practice, so I don't put too much stock into it, just like I don't put too much stock in the fact that Kaiser's on the fast track to being the week one starter. I think that's a good idea to see how much Kaiser can truly handle at this stage. But if you're a guy like Brock, I mean, I don't know how what really set me back too with Brock Osweiler was kind of the way he reacted to the kind of the questions about last year and whether or not he could be a starting quarterback. I think
I loved it.
Yeah. Do you love the question or the answer or both?
I loved his answers.
Yeah. I mean, trust me, people were killing Doug Lamorese for the question, but I don't think it was a bad question at all. It's a great question. The fact that I think Brock took it a little defensively versus kind of embracing it and being like, you know what? Yeah, I did play. Like last year is not a good way to look at how I'm able to play. I can play better than that, and I know that I'm better than what was on the film last year. I think that's a much better answer than being defensive.
Yeah, but you know he gets pestered all the time.
Yeah, but you're a quarterback.
And it gets to a point where you're just like,
you gotta have thick skin. Gotta have thick skin. He's, I mean,
I think it was more of a confidence thing. He's like, there's proof. It's in the film.
There's not, though. I mean, he came out almost like Trevor Bauer, like when he gave up five runs that one game and was like, oh, well, if you look at, like, I put every pitch where I wanted it to be, like, they just hit him. And I'm like, well, I get that, but you still gave up six runs in X amount of innings. You know, it's not a good performance. So it's almost like not having the self-awareness that you need to address the fact that, yeah, you played crappy and people are going to talk to you about it. So what are you going to do to make them think that you're a better quarterback than what you've shown on film? You know, it's just not even helping his cause.
He's in a town or on a team that has no intention of making him like part of the future plans. So for him, it's almost tough because he's like, they're almost asking him, are you a starter? I'd say for other teams,
but you can make the starting roster. Like if he's going to be a starting quarterback, he can play well and the Browns will play him. If he's a good quarterback, the Browns are not going to play him, you know? So if you're Brock Osweiler, go out and show that you can play and you could start for the franchise that's never had a starting quarterback. If you can't start for the Browns, then what does that really say for you about as a quarterback? You know, this is really his last shot. Because if you can't play for the Browns, then what are you doing? I mean, that team, we haven't had a quarterback since Bernie Kosar. And
I mean, it's his last shot for the kind of deal he got last year. But, I mean, you even look at guys like Ryan Fitzpatrick, whose cycle goes from kind of kick to the curb, is a backup, does well, giant contract, repeat. And with the quarterback market being so thin, you look at what Mike Glennon got. I mean,
unbelievable.
I don't even know if Brock has to start here to get another chance, like a good chance to prove himself again. Because if he gets through this year, doesn't play, goes to another team, has like a decent year, he can get a Glennon type deal.
Yeah, and I think as a competitor, obviously you don't want to get a deal like that. You want to play in the league for as long as you can. But I just, if someone wanted him as a backup, I mean, they take him as a backup, and I think the Browns ultimately will hang on to him as a backup as long until Kizer proves that he's either ready to take over that role or maybe they just keep him in dress clothes for the whole season. You know, I don't think that's going to happen, but if you got a guy like Brock there that's not causing any damage in the quarterback room or in the locker room, kind of like some of the rumblings we heard in Houston, he's obviously a good backup to have, but it's just one of those things where you never know how a guy's going to react, like you said, with the fact that he really has no future with the team.
Yeah, and it's really tough because, I mean, he doesn't seem like a guy who's going to have a bad attitude and mope around because...
He did that in Houston, though.
I mean, he knows... He still has to prove himself.
He got in fights with Bill O'Brien because...
Bill O'Brien is... I don't think he's as... He's like walking around like, oh, I've developed quarterbacks. Like, he coached Tom Brady, which involves like, good work, Tom.
I
mean,
so the way I took all those kind of rumblings and how I think it played out, and I could be totally off base, but this is just where my thought process lies. Some of the rumblings were that it was like after a meeting, like that Bill kind of got into it with Brock and there was almost like a shoving match. And what
I think that was when Savage got hurt and then he's like, all right, Brock, you're back in the game.
It's almost like,
and he's like, you don't want me out there, so why am I going out there?
It's
immature, yeah. But you don't know if Bill O'Brien was like being...
And that's what I'm saying, you know, too. Like, there's obviously some sort of tension that's building from somewhere. So I almost tend to think, like, even with the response that he got from Doug's criticism of the fact that he doesn't, or why he thinks he's a starting quarterback, it almost leads me to believe that, like, maybe in the film room or when they're going over like a previous game or something, that Brock doesn't necessarily agree with, that he's confrontational with his coach. So it's just a strange situation, and he may not be that way at all. From everything that I've read out of Berea, he's been great to have around. So I don't know. I just don't think he can play football, and that's why I didn't want him to begin with. But I'll take a second round pick.
Yeah, I think it's probably easier to be happy around here too, because Hugh Jackson passes off some great vibes, and when the team was as bad as it was last year, everyone's going to be optimistic. So he shows up and they're like, oh, wow, how are the playoffs? And he's like, oh, let me tell you about those playoffs.
Come on.
And he's like the only one in the quarterback room with like real experience.
Come here and sit on my 6'9" knee.
Giant lap.
Imagine him.
Yeah, I mean, he's...
They say
he's essentially the leader of the group.
Yeah, they were saying that he towers over his offensive line and that he has, like, no mobility in the pocket because it's... I mean, how if you're 6... What is he? He's 6'8", right? That's insane.
I believe
how
so.
You can, how, and Paxton Lynch can run like that, but Brock is not Paxton Lynch.
That's a very interesting statement you just made. Brock Osweiler is no Paxton Lynch.
I was
Lynch.
Very good at the algebra proofs in math class, like the substitutive, I don't even remember. Transitive method.
Sounds like you were very good at those.
I was terrible, actually. I was trig. I think it was trigonometry. That was my least favorite. Algebra I was good at. It was trigonometry and geometry that I was not good at. Like, terrible. Miss Rossell's math class. Whew. That was rough. Wow.
Jeez.
It was a rough time, man.
Great.
Eighth grade's a tough time in a young boy's life.
That's true, but I feel like it's not
maybe
relevant
not for,
to
maybe
this.
Maybe not for those reasons or to this podcast.
Yeah, anyway. I mean, back to Brock.
If you want to talk more about my childhood, we've got a phone dial-in number here. Give us a call. We'll be on the rest of the night.
I mean, I know you are, you said several times in the past 10 minutes that you don't think Brock Osweiler can, quote, play football.
Yes, that is correct.
Am I correct on that? Yes. No further questions. No, but, I mean, it's easy in the off season to be like, oh, he stinks. Kessler and Kizer are better, but it's the Browns we're talking about, so...
Steven...
He may be needed.
Steven, so, the reason I think Brock Osweiler cannot play football...
Is the proof in the film?
Yes. Because he's coming from a team that had a top five defense, a stud running back in Lamar Miller, a stud wide receiver in DeAndre Hopkins, plus Braxton Miller and Will Fuller, who early on, Will Fuller was like a rookie of the year candidate. Everyone was salivating over him in fantasy football. I mean, that is the recipe for a quarterback to go in and play average football and can win games. And Brock did that. But there were times, like that team is a 12-4 team if Deshaun Watson goes in there and just has even Cody Kessler numbers last year.
I will say this. Brock Osweiler didn't throw for over 300 yards in one game last year, and that is concerning.
That's terrible.
15 touchdowns, 16 interceptions.
If I wanted to watch RG3 type numbers play, I mean, that's what you're getting. And even Cody Kessler, I mean, did he really have a game where he threw for 300 yards? I think it was Miami, right? That first game he threw.
Yeah, I believe so.
And so that's the kind of pushing the ball that we need to see. We can't afford to keep having these three and out. I mean, yeah, we'll run it on first down, then pass for second down and do the Pat Shurmur run a route that doesn't get you a first down play call. There was so much of that last year where the offense would get on the field after a long touchdown by the other team, or even a quick touchdown for that matter, and the offense goes three and out. And you're like, well, give it right back to them, and they'll make it 14-0. And I think the defense will help with parts of that, but at some point you've got to get someone that can pinpoint those deep out routes or just be able to make a throw downfield that makes you go, wow, I haven't seen that ever, you know, since Brian Hoyer. Yeah, I said it. Brian Hoyer. Wow.
Since Brian Hoyer. No, I agree. I think ultimately it's going to be Kessler's year to prove he can do that. And if he can't, you got Kizer waiting. But I want to bring up something
one prediction?
About Kessler I saw recently. No prediction yet. It's too early.
I'm just saying my upset pick is that Kizer wins the job either within the first 3 weeks of the season.
That's what I saw. Mary Kay Cabot was writing about
it. I don't
that.
Think it's, I mean, I haven't read that article yet, but I heard something about it. And I just think that I wrote an article on the fact that I think Kizer should play week one. And if they see enough from him in training camp that gives you like his upside is way more than Kessler, to be honest with you. And I think they can afford to go through some growing pains this year to find out if he can be a big time quarterback, because then you can either trade out of that spot. If there's a guy there, like if you think Kizer's your franchise guy, I still don't think you pass up on a Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen guy at number one, but at least it gives you the idea to say, maybe we trade out or and pick up a guy later or something like that, because we think Kaiser could be the guy for at least the next 3 years.
Wait, you think the Browns are going to have the number one pick?
They could. Hey, what? I had them going 5-11.
I don't think they will. I don't think they're going to be that
they
bad.
They might. No, I don't think they'll be 1-15.
Isaiah Crowell said they're going to shock the world.
And that's the thing. I hate being optimistic with this team because I've been let down so many times. But it's one of those years where I'm like, I just see some of the energy that comes out of there. Like Hugh Jackson, like when Mike Pettine was going into his second year, was there any like the feeling was just like, ugh, like what is going on?
It was dark. You know,
Johnny's in rehab. Josh Gordon suspended. You're like, I'm not confident in this team at all. They just lost 5 games in a row to seal themselves out of the playoffs. It's like, there's nothing to look forward to. And even after a 1-15 season, I almost get that feeling that maybe this is the start of a turnaround and I'll just have to wait for the football gods to smack me upside the head and put me back to earth.
It's almost just even the positive messages from Hugh Jackson and Sashi Brown that lacked in the past. It was almost defensive, like, you got to leave the drafting to us. Sashi Brown will come out and explain the decisions and offer up clarification and be professional. Mm-hmm. And Hugh Jackson is there always being positive. He's never going to, I mean, when Hugh Jackson is negative, it's almost like, it's not even negative.
He's not
sad.
Negative. He just doesn't like, yeah. It's almost like he's kind of like how he's gone out of his way to not say anything nice about Brock Osweiler.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, he's not going to come. He's like Terry Francona. He's not going to come out and say that one of his players is bad or doing something wrong.
He's a traditional coach.
Yeah, he's going to keep it in house, and that's how it should be.
But yeah, it's the we talk about it all the time, but I think Hugh brings it starts with him bringing the optimism, and hopefully it works out. But I want to ask you about an article I read recently. It was on ESPN.com, and it was explaining how Cody Kessler ate the same food every day for 3 months, with only a few exceptions. Could you eat the same food, not just one, it was like three meals, but different foods, but could you do that for 3 months?
I actually would want to do that. I mean, I've tried. When Kate and I were doing our eating healthy thing, it was almost like that. It was, I mean, I didn't do it for 3 months, but I did it.
I like
it.
When we were doing that thing.
Healthy. No, it was
eating
healthy. I made a veggie shake in the morning and then had something small for lunch and then something small for dinner. It's like once you get into a routine of it and you have those things available, it's easy to do. And I prefer that because I'm just a routine oriented person. So
you're saying like every day, you're like, oh, it's almost turkey sandwich time. You could do that without bored of the turkey sandwich.
If my job was to just work out and learn football as a quarterback and play and go and throw routes to receivers and practice all day, I would have no problem doing that. But it's the.
But what if you're driving and you see that there's a new Cane's location and you're like, I was about to make this turkey sandwich, but there's a new Cane's location.
I
got to see if the chicken tastes the same.
I would just go get some Cane's sauce and put it on my turkey.
just a tub.
Just to dunk the whole thing in there.
Hi, can I get all your Cane's sauce? I'm on a diet.
Get like a liter of Cane's sauce.
See, I saw that and I was like, I don't know if I could do that. Plus, I can't really cook. So it'd be like I'm eating chicken every day, but it's like kind of poorly cooked and seasoned.
I love meal prep. I mean, it's a pain in the butt to do, but like if you can make sure, like part of the issue is just some of that stuff just goes bad, you know, and you have to literally stick to it every day. And my job, I don't have too much of a routine for the most part. Like it kind of varies every morning. So, I mean, but if I was in an office job, I would totally, I mean, it's just a routine. I could totally do that, I think. And it's a good thing. Like if you're out there thinking about starting to eat healthy, I would totally recommend it. You sleep better, you feel better, everything's great, but I've just been really lazy with it the last 3 months.
I find eating healthy is fun on paper.
Very much so. Very much.
Because you're like, oh, you're going to feel better.
But I feel good when I eat
Cane's.
But
if there's a new Chipotle or Cane's location,
they make me feel really good too. Just not afterward.
Like sometimes there's people working out and other times you just want to be just
lumping
around.
The thing is, you don't have to work out. It's just like, I mean, working out helps.
Like, you just need to like.
No,
walk.
You just. I mean, if 80% of your diet and losing weight, or 80% of losing weight, is just going to be your diet. Because if you can control the calories that you're taking in, you're going to burn naturally like 22,000 calories a day, right? 25, I don't know.
22,000 calories a day?
I almost said 20, and then I was like 22. Did I say 22,000? Oh, that's on the record.
I'm like, if you're burning 22,000 calories, you're either an elephant.
And that's even a low number, probably. It's just...
You heard it here.
I'm burning 22,000 calories a day.
Doing nothing. Just eating salad.
Just sitting in a hot room all day with my heart rate.
Am I in a sauna? But, yeah, I saw that article, and I immediately was horrified. And it's crazy. It's like 6 a.m. almonds. I'm like, 6 a.m.? Who's up to eat at 6 a.m.?
I think I text you. Apparently I text you every morning from the bathroom like 6 a.m. when I'm in my...
I know, and what the problem is with these early texts is I wake up and see it, and then I forget that it happened, and 12 hours later I go, oh no, he's going to think I'm ghosted.
Half the time it's a Snapchat from you at like 2 a.m. doing whatever you're doing, and then it's me up at 6. Like,
well, I will say this. Last night I did Snapchat you at 2 in the morning. I was watching the Browns versus the Falcons, week 17, 2002. But I wanted you, I figured you should know. I'm doing research.
Yeah. I mean, I think we need to brush up on our early 2000s Browns. Our mid-2000s Browns are pretty good.
Solid.
Quincy Morgan, Andre Davis, those guys. Those are the cool guys. Antonio Bryant.
Yeah, I just need to do some research. And I had to let you know because if I couldn't just tell anyone that I was... Because no one would get... I can't share it on Facebook. You guys remember this game? Michael Vick was really... He had a horrible game. Be like, well, is that 2002?
Dude, it's so boring right now for football. I just want the chaos to start.
I know.
I've been waiting for the finals for so... Like, I'm going to Vegas for games 2, 3, and 4, and I couldn't be more excited.
I will say this. I'll ask you a question. Are you going to put any Browns over-under bets while in Vegas? I think... Isn't it like four and a half wins?
Yeah, I should put money on 5 because that was my prediction for the season. $2,000.
$2,000. So when they start 0-10, you're like, oh,
I'm gonna freak out. Yeah. I don't know if I'll put 2,000. I might divide that by 100. Yeah. don't make that mistake at the betting window. I'd like to bet 200,000. Oh God.
Here's my card.
Well, I have $6.
So you'll bet if it's 4.5, you'll take the over.
Yeah, I don't think I'll for this podcast, I'll say that I will. But when it comes down to it, betting on the Browns is like throwing money at nothing.
Let me ask you another betting theme question. If there were such a prop bet that said Brock Osweiler will start over under 2.5 games this year, which would you take?
Over.
Really?
Yeah.
You think he's going to start 3 games?
I think just... Everyone gets hurt, man. Browns quarterbacks just get hurt. Who do you think is going to start week 17? You know, it's one of those things.
Kevin
Hogan? There hasn't been a Browns quarterback to play 16 games in a season in a long time.
Since Tim Couch.
Yeah. So if I was a betting man, 2.5 games, you give me 3 games with Brock. If it was 3 games with anybody other than Cody Kessler, I would take it in a heartbeat.
Would you
with
do,
Brock Osweiler,
would you do 7.5
no.
Kaiser and take the over?
No, I'd take the under.
So you think it's going to be kind of a mashup of Kessler, Brock, and Kaiser?
Well, it depends. I mean, if Kaiser's not ready to start, obviously he's not going to be the number 2 quarterback either, you know? So if Brock's back there, Cody, it just depends on how well Kaiser would be prepared come training camp, you know? If they're comfortable enough with him that he knows the offense and that he can run it seamlessly without really any limited restrictions, kind of like how Kessler was on the playbook, then great. Then you have really no need for Brock Osweiler.
It is crazy with Kaiser because physically he's clearly the best option.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of like he is young. I mean, he's a rookie and you have to like kind of weigh the pros and cons of, do we want to start a rookie when we're trying to establish any stability?
But the thing is like teams like, and I understand he was drafted in the 3rd round, but teams like Tampa Bay,
second round.
And teams like, oh, that's right. Teams like Tampa Bay, teams like Tennessee, teams like Oakland. I mean, all these teams that the Browns want to emulate their rebuild around are starting quarterbacks early.
Russell Wilson and, too.
Yeah. I don't think it's because they're not ready. I think that as an NFL rookie, you have some sort of cognitive ability to recognize a playbook. You know, it's not rocket science.
And that's all they're doing.
Yeah, and that's if your job is literally to go in there and try to understand this playbook, you've got people at your disposal trying to teach you or trying to relate it in a way that you'll understand.
And also, so these guys, if you're drafted as an NFL quarterback, you have, like you said, it's like some crazy ability to just take that in. Me and you would look at it and be like, I have no idea what I'm looking at.
You've been around football your whole life. It's not like defenses are uncommon. I mean, obviously things get more complex at that level, but if you've just paid attention to football, like as you've been playing, you should have some sort of ability to understand the game and what to expect as an NFL quarterback. Now, whether it comes down to your off time and how you spend your off time, whether it's studying your playbook or
in Vegas
dressed
in disguise.
As Billy Manziel, yeah, or dressed as Billy Manziel is up to you, and that's what separates the good quarterbacks from the bad. So you look at a guy like Cody Kessler; he's first in, last out. I mean, that's the kind of attitude that you need to have as a starting quarterback. And I think I hope he plays well. I just think there's some physical limitations that'll give the angst for Kaiser a little bit more fuel.
Yeah. I was reading
sticking with Kessler.
In that same article about his diet, it said he gained strength and arm strength without really having a lift because of the food he was eating. So perhaps his arm strength improves.
Yeah. It
and,
probably helped
you know,
with his lower body too.
He's not going to be throwing Aaron Rodgers 70-yard Hail Marys, but if he can just be solid.
Yeah. It helps with mechanics too. I mean, sometimes you find yourself, I think I read an excerpt saying that he found himself not really, or just using more of his lower body versus more upper body, which is what he was doing last year. And it's like even little tweaks like that can make such a difference in your mechanics. So I think he's going to do well. I hope he can just win some games. That's all I'm looking for out of Cody Kessler, honestly.
Yeah, it doesn't matter if he can just win games and not turn the ball over.
Yeah.
He doesn't need to throw for 300 yards.
Just keep us in the game. And when it comes down to making a crucial third down or we're in the red zone, we need a touchdown versus a field goal, not throwing a Tony Romo interception or, you know, just making the right plays as a quarterback that put your team in position to win versus making the plays that separate you as a bad team from a playoff contender.
Man.
Or even that middling 8-8 Minnesota Viking curse.
I'd be fine with 1-8-8 year, I'll be honest. Yeah, maybe two.
Hell, I'd take three at this point. The worst part, though, and the thing I don't get about the NFL, and this happens with even coaches for the most part, aside from like the Patriots and the Spurs, it's almost like I think the best example was Andy Reid going to four straight NFC championships, not winning any of them, but then getting fired.
Well, he won one, right?
Well, and they went to the Super Bowl once.
They lost to the Pats like in 05
but,
or something.
They were like, he was always known for being that coach who could never get you over the hump. Marty Schottenheimer, another one. I just don't understand why, and I get that there's a certain like complacent factor that people get, like especially players. You know, you're like, if you've played on the team for all four of those years, you're like, oh, like this, we've done this 4 years in a row. Like, I'm done. You know, you can only follow someone for so long. But
yeah, you lose the locker room at a certain point.
Yeah, but it's so sad because Andy Reid's such a good coach. Look what he's doing in Kansas City.
But I still can't get over the hump there.
Yeah, and it's just and sometimes, you know, there's going to come a time where Kansas City will get tired of it and they'll try to hire a new coach, and sometimes most of the time it doesn't work out in a good way. And so like Cincinnati's another example with Marvin Lewis. I mean, they've just been the same forever. They get in the first round, they lose, but if you're the owner, you can't not be happy with that. But as a player, you've got to be frustrated because you hear the same song and dance over and over and over from the coach. It just starts to lose a little bit of its luster.
Yeah, and even if he gives you like a pep talk and you've been on the team for 7 years, you're like, is this really going to change anything?
Mm-hmm. And it's hard to believe that a guy like Bill Belichick too, or Popovich, you know, it's not like they're not guys that are instilling that like,
well, that's
infectious,
almost like a philosophy that their team is under.
Yeah, like you have Pete Carroll, who's like your big cheerleader, Jim Harbaugh, another cheerleader type coach, versus a Bill Belichick who's all strategy, you know, no nonsense. But like, I'm curious to find out how he gets his message across to his players, because it's like he's not a flamboyant guy.
You never know.
Like Hugh Jackson's one of those guys that's like, I mean, he's gonna tell it like it is, but he's gonna also hype you up to be like, he's gonna give you confidence, like that little bit of swagger, and like it's just a cool attitude to have as a head coach. But I feel like it's just like part of those acts that'll ride thin if you end up staying complacent for more than a couple years.
No, I agree. As kind of a little wrap up here, I want to ask you a prediction question. Will Hugh Jackson be the head coach here in 2019, regardless of the next 2 years' outcomes? Or does he need to have a win, like, good season this year?
I think there's got to be improvement. I mean, I think we talked about a little bit in the
if they go like 0-16, and that's.
I mean, even if you're looking at a 3-13 season, the things that I'm looking for are like similar to what Jacksonville did in 2015 with Blake Bortles. they were 5-11, I believe, after that year, but every single game was like the offense was putting up big numbers. You know, there was optimism stemming from the quarterback position. He threw a lot of interceptions, but everyone was like, oh, if he cuts down on those, you know, like we're in good shape. The defense,
established hope.
Yeah, you know, it kind of puts you in that position for next year. Like, all right, let's. And obviously it didn't work out. This time it didn't work out. But even the year, like similar to what Oakland did, Oakland put in Derek Carr, you know, had a, I think, what did they? They lost their first six, right? That year, that first year with
Derek
Carr.
They went 0-10, I think, because they won that Thursday night game.
Oh, that's right. So, they went 0-10, and then they come back. You know, they have bad years, but there's still positives that you can take from it. And while last year was a real big negative, I'm sure there's some positives that they took from it, albeit not many. But there's got to be a point where, as an organization, you're seeing improvement from the people that you've put in place versus just nothing happening. Like Mike Pettine, there was no improvement at all.
Yeah, he kind of lost that team after they started their losing streak.
I don't know. And that's where I always have that problem with quarterbacks is like, you've got a guy in Brian Hoyer, so make Johnny your backup and stick with it. That's it.
Yeah, you don't see the Saints like benching Drew Brees.
No. And I get that Brian Hoyer's not a franchise guy, but the worst thing they could have done was, one, open that up to a quarterback competition that first year.
Mid-season.
And then mid-season, swap everything out. You're like, just ride with what got you there. And that was not necessarily Pettine's fault, more Farmer's fault, but I'm ready to move on from that.
Yeah, I'm sure Kyle Shanahan wasn't really calling for Manziel.
No.
It's irrelevant now, but
yeah, I don't want
to
talk about
one winning season, so we never have to talk about that year again.
Yes, very much so. Just like the Cavs winning or LeBron coming back made me forget about Samardo Samuels and Donald
Never
Sloan.
Never forget about Samardo Samuels.
Oh, my God.
Donald Sloan.
He looked like Samardo Samuels, I thought, was honestly a fan that they picked out of the crowd to come play power forward for the Cavs.
He could have been.
He might as well have been.
It Where is unbelievable.
Samardo, how did they have that many players that just did, even on the LeBron teams, like, how did they have that many players that were just bad basketball
Look at the
players?
Browns. It's like, how is this guy in the NFL? He's going to get hurt.
Ira Neubel, Sasha Pavlovich, Danielle Marshall.
You're making me nostalgic now.
I still remember, though. Remember when Boobie Gibson hit those threes in that game 6 against Detroit? That was awesome. I was in that state. I was in my basement. And the worst part is that, like, I think I was doing, like, jumping jacks or something. They started to come back. And so, like, I didn't want to
Why were you doing jumping jacks?
I don't know. I was just nervous. So I didn't want to, like,
I thought you were just,
streak.
Like, doing them for some other project.
No, I just do CrossFit in my spare time back in 2008 that was? I don't even know what year that was. 2009 maybe?
7.
I don't know. Yeah. But I was, like, I was afraid to stop doing them because the Cavs would stop scoring. It's almost like when you're playing baseball or you're like watching a baseball game and you leave the room and they score and you're like, stay in the other room. They scored while you weren't there.
See, I don't do that. I'm selfish, so.
Superstition.
But yes.
Question for you to wrap it up. How many Browns quarterbacks are we going to see on the field this year in 2017?
Like in real time or just in general?
Yeah, in the game. How many... Excuse me, how many...
the question almost killed me.
How many Browns quarterbacks are going to make a start for the Browns this year?
Oh, a start. Okay. Yeah, so not just like garbage
How many
time.
Are you going to see in action? I mean, we saw... How many quarterbacks did we see last year in action total?
I think 6 if you count Pryor, but I don't really count Pryor.
All right, so 5. So last year was 5. How many do you think this year they'll have?
I'm going to say 3. I say Kessler, Osweiler, Kaiser. I think in like maybe I think Kessler's going to I do think Kessler's going to win the job. But his health is an issue, and I think Kaiser's going to get some. Maybe if it's like a blowout, maybe
come
some
get
reps.
Some.
And then Brock, I don't know, yeah. Wild card.
I don't know. I'm going to go with 2 because I think Kaiser's going to win the job after Kessler, or over Kessler in like week 3-ish, maybe even earlier. I think Kaiser will be the starter before week 3.
Wow.
That's my
bold prediction.
What
if the Browns come out and beat the Steelers 55-0 week 1?
That'd be crazy.
Myles Garrett has 4 touchdowns.
Fine.
This is why I like talking about the Browns. They just drafted an amazing defensive end, and we're talking about Brock Osweiler. I hope that never changes.
Never change. Hey, until we find a quarterback, we'll be here talking about him. So
we won't leave this spot.
That'll keep giving us witty banter for the Dog Pound Daily podcast. So as long as the Browns quarterbacks don't play well, we'll still have a platform.
Indeed. And we are now at the conclusion of our 10th episode.
Woo.
We are probably going to take next week off, as we took the last week off, for Andrew's Billy Manziel Vegas trip.
Yeah, I'm going to come in Thursday, you know, not even know what day it is, like bring my recording stuff and just...
All right, I'm at the Bellagio. What are we talking about?
Yeah. I'm here live. I see Johnny Manziel, actually.
Jeez. So, but yeah, episode 10, I'm very excited that we reached that point, this point. And
no turning back now.
Yeah, we have to do an 11 and a 12. Yeah, hopefully by the time we do our next one, more good news will continue to come out as training camp approaches. I'm sure there'll be some crazy quarterback reports.
Yep. We just got to keep locking for a quiet. That's all we need to do.
Yeah, we got to keep him out of the news. But thank you for listening to the Dog Pound Daily Podcast.